Fasten your chin strap and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
Welcome back into the Eric Ainge Show. Appreciate you tuning in to us today. Got a fun topic coming at you right now. Brian, we're going to pick some of our favorites, and we want to hear from you right now, the listener. Who are some of your favorites, your favorite Tennessee football players of the last decade?
Yeah, the 2010. So the 2010 season through now. Who have been some of your favorite players over that stretch? If you have to name one, Eric Ainge, from the last 10 years that is your favorite, who are you going to pick?
Kurt Majette. Not close.
I like it. So are we looking at a potential early draft pick for you on Friday when we draft the Tennessee defense of the 2010s?
That would probably be, yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know. He's... one of the only guys that I've seen in football, because you can be a leader not on the court in basketball if you're injured. You can be a leader in the clubhouse, not on the field in baseball. Kaner, ride with me on this one. It's really, really hard over the course of a season or especially if things aren't going well, to be a leader, a positive leader that guys on the field listen to when you yourself are not on the field, if you're not on the field.
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, it's you almost check out, and you try not to check out, but I mean, it's, you're, especially if you're done for the season. I mean,
you're not out there.
Yeah.
You're not out there, and it's such a, it's not a contact sport like baseball or basketball, or it is a collision sport. It is gladiator mentality. It is throw your body to the, you know, and just whatever happens, happens. I mean, like, you can't have, it's really hard to do that. I mean, it's the whole, it's why you, I know war's not football, but it's why it's so often used, because you have your field generals, and that's the guys that are out there, right?
Yeah.
And that is, and Kurt Majette's one of the only people I've ever seen injured, not be able to be out there, and still be the field general, the guy that everyone was listening to and turning to. And that's, I just, that is such a testament to him that he won me over, even in the era that he played when we weren't any good. He won me over.
Kaner, I know you were playing college football for part of this, and we want to hear from you. 656-9900, 866-656-9900 to join us here on the Eric Ainge Show. Who is your favorite player of the 2010s? Kaner, I know you were playing college football for part of that decade. Who is your favorite Tennessee player of the last 10 seasons?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to say some obvious ones. Of course, Josh Dobbs was a fan favorite. You know, Juwan Jennings the last, you know, couple of years. I like the way AJ Johnson played on the field. I thought he was just awesome.
Now Alexander.
Yeah, now Alexander Johnson. Derek Barnett's another name that comes to mind, and though it ended horribly, and I understand that, and I understand why a lot of Tennessee fans can't stand him, I like Jalen Hurd. I thought he ran so hard.
So Jalen Hurd is going to be on my favorite list. I've just decided. The guy's a roster NFL player.
Oh, when I
see film channel, the highlight channel Tennessee that does the highlights, and there's always Jalen Hurd stuff that gets put out there, and I'm like, he was my favorite player. And I would list, and I'm pretty probably did then, as a top five Vol of all time through his first 2 years in school. Like, yeah. I loved how he played football.
When I get the draft on a running back, if he's still on the board, he's going to be my number one pick. for a running back for that position. Because, like, everyone, frankly, let's be real, there haven't been that many great running backs here in the last decade.
That was a surprisingly shorter list as I was going through.
Everybody gives Butch a hard time because he underutilized Alvin Kamara. And I think seeing how good Alvin's, like, what his ceiling is, it's, of course, he underutilized him. Any utilization level period in college would have been an underutilization of what Alvin Kamara was, because Alvin Kamara hadn't realized how good he was yet. Let's just put that out there. But I don't blame Butch or anybody over there for through those first 2 years of school, especially that the one that everyone always goes for, which is the first year mainly that they were together, for wanting to put the ball in Jalen Hurd's hand every time they possibly could.
Jalen Hurd, had he not had the slight injury and then the quitting in the middle of the season, would have been Tennessee's all-time leading rusher.
And it wouldn't be close, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, we don't talk about that a whole lot, but that's why he was being used the way he was, because, well, he's going to be your all-time leading rusher. I mean, the thing I always look back on, and people want to argue with me on this, and I still have the stat document that I pulled up, giving Alvin Kamara more touches over the two-year period that he played here would have won you exactly one more football game. And when you look at the games that Tennessee lost, Alvin had really good games in them. South Carolina in 2016, A&M in 2016, Vanderbilt in 2016. Those were three of his best statistical games in a Tennessee uniform. You know what? You still lost. You look at some other games that Tennessee struggled with in 2015. I mean, you can make some arguments, but 2015 Alvin Kamara wasn't 2016 Alvin Kamara.
No, 2015 Alvin Kamara couldn't get on the field because he didn't know the pass protections, because he didn't study it enough. That's what I'm saying. Alvin didn't know how good or what was necessary. He was still the Alvin that got that Nick Saban didn't want in his program anymore.
I wouldn't say that he was that guy.
He hadn't realized that you have to study film enough. All I'm saying is not behaviorally, but from a football buy-in standpoint, understanding, he had not had the light bulb moment yet that went, I could be so good and I'm still not on the field. I think 15 in general was that moment for him.
He's spoiler alert for my draft coming up later this week. He's still going to be somebody that I really want on that. I tell you, somebody who was underrated but was a big part of a big offense was Zach Rogers. In the 2012 season, he stepped into the role that Derrick Rogers was supposed to have. Because remember, Derrick gets kicked off the team the day after Media Day. We had him at Media Day. I walked around with him at Media Day, and then the next day he's not on the team anymore. Zach Rogers stepped in and played that role and opened it up. You know, Justin Hunter and Cordell Patterson, incredible, were able to create on their own and everything that came with it. But having that third option and having those two guys on the field with him, by the way, was why Zach Rogers had so many opportunities.
And Michael Rivera, but keep going.
Yeah, but remember him taking it over the top against NC State in that game. In a lot of the big passing games, Zach Rogers was a big part of it. So you talk about it, I'm using an underrated player for my first mention here, and so he gets mine because I think he did things that, you know, he's the college football player that isn't going to have a pro career, but came in, did everything he could ask, and really enabled some of his teammates to have a really, really good season as well. 656-9900, if you want to join us here on the Eric Haynes Show, who are some of your favorite players?
I'm trying to think of another one that I have that's kind of a off-the-radar guy is going to be, believe it or not, a position that I'm not fond of often. Michael Pilardi.
Oh. You went kicker.
Michael Pilardi. You know, we've had some good kickers, some bad kickers. We've had some good kicking seasons, some bad kicking seasons, but Michael Pilardi, because of the era that he kicked in right at the beginning of that era, this 2010s era, he, I feel like, didn't ever really have a chance here as far as like people were concerned and fans and stuff like that, because, well, I mean, we've all watched phenomenal kickers here for a long time, but he was actually really good and he's gotten better and he's still playing in the NFL. Got to go Michael Pilardi.
656-9900, 866-656-9900 if you want to weigh in on Twitter as well. Taking your comments there. More on your favorite players of the 2010s at Tennessee next on the Eric Ainge Show.
And, you know, 30 yards of it, it's like, I get it. It's crazy.
Kaner, we may be related because I was allergic to literally everything else in the world. Grass, dust, pets, but never allergic to poison ivy. I could go, like you said, roll around in it. There was a big patch of it at my elementary and middle school. I'd be the kid who would jump in there to get the football when it went over the fence. And then I weeded the yard of one of my teachers in high school, and my left arm blew up to twice the normal size. Like, it was bad. So, yeah, I'm with you. That's
it's not fun.
That should have been the profile pick side.
So,
boom. Yeah. Look at the guns, folks.
Send that to the coaches in high school. Hey, look what I've been doing this summer.
Ugh. Hey, I got a question for you here, yes. Boys. Besides the obvious topic and reading some responses here, this is from Twitter. Thoughts on the Vols' travel schedules this fall? Will it be the same, or are there any new challenges as well? I'm going to need about 10 minutes. Okay, boys?
Okay.
I'm gonna need about 10 minutes. I'm a little fearful that his eyes are swelling shut.
Okay, all right, I got you. We got you covered. 656-9900. We're talking about our favorite players of the 2010s for Tennessee football. Some of the responses from Twitter. Our buddy Roger Hoover says Derek Rogers. He was a lot of fun to watch play. It did not end well, but he was a lot of fun to watch when he was here. Bill says Juwan Jennings. That's one that I'm surprised we hadn't heard, that none of us came out with as our first pick, because Juwan Jennings, a really, really fun player to watch. Nathan says Nick Revez plays through the knee injury, doesn't have surgery, scoring a touchdown on the knee, pretty good day for him. And I would add another one on playing through injuries, Jacob Gillum, a former walk-on, earns a scholarship, plays on a torn ACL for the entire 2014 season, and then breaks, I believe, a finger in the last practice before the Tax Slayer Bowl, and said, well, I'm not going to miss my last game. Just wrap it up. I'll deal with the consequences afterwards. That was a great story, and he played really, really good in that game. A really big win for Tennessee in that Tax Slayer Bowl. Tim is on the Eric Ainge Show. Tim has some advice for Eric Ainge.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Hey, good. Good morning.
Eric Ainge, get some acetone from Home Depot or Lowe's and put it on your kid, and it'll take care of it instantly.
All right. That's some good advice, because he just walked away to make sure that the eyes aren't swelling shut. So acetone.
Yeah, be careful putting it on there.
Yeah.
But, you know, and throw away whatever rag or whatever you put, Kleenex, whatever you put it on, throw it away, because it will take some stuff off of some stuff, paint and stuff like that. So, but
all
acetone
right.
is, I found out this year, a buddy I play golf with told me that, and I didn't believe him, but it does. It'll take it straight off.
All right, Tim, that's good advice. We appreciate it. We'll make sure Eric gets Bathes Turner in it here in a little bit. We appreciate it. 656-9900. Favorite players of the 2010s. Caleb says Brian Randolph at safety. I think he's one of the most consistent players that Tennessee had. When I was back looking at doing the research for our draft that we're going to do Thursday and Friday, it is amazing to me how few players started games for Tennessee in the 2010s at both cornerback and safety. There was a long run of success and a long run of starts for a very small number of players at each position, to the point where, you know, some of the guys that we will draft from on Friday when we draft the defense are guys that did not start very many games because the starting positions were on lockdown for so long by guys like guys that he mentioned, like Brian Randolph, that just had the position and didn't give it up.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys like that. And, of course, Brian Randolph, he, you know, went to camp with the L.A. Rams and had a, you know, a little cup of coffee in the NFL. And he's joined a lot of our game day programs. He joined a TV show we used to do here at the Sports Animal. And he's been a friend of the program. So I like Brian Randolph. He's a tough guy. And he's not afraid to tell you exactly what he thought about some former head coaches here at the University of Tennessee as well. So I always liked the way he played on the field. He was tough as nails.
Yeah, he was. Crispin adds to Juwan Jennings. Dustin says Josh Dobbs or Alvin Kamara. Michael says Juwan Jennings or Derek Barnett. Derek Barnett, another one that I'm surprised it took this long for his name to come up. But he also says he'd give a nod to Evan Berry when he had the ball in his hands.
Which Evan was Berry's, few and far between.
Yeah. You know, they tried for several years to work him into some offensive packages, and they could not recreate on offense how special he was with the ball in his hands on kickoff returns.
You see a lot of that, too. You remember Devin Hester? He was a defensive back, and Chicago tried so hard to make it work at wide receiver with them, and they just couldn't. And you see that with a lot of players. Not to say that, you know, now Evan dealt with a ton of injuries as well, too, so that was a big issue for him. But some players just kind of like that. You're specialized in one thing, and that, you know, being a returner, and then your primary position's a cornerback or safety or whatever it may be. But just try to get yourself onto the field and with the ball in your hands. A lot of players just don't adapt to that.
Yeah. Jeremy says Josh Dobbs. I think Josh Dobbs is the most popular pick of this 2010s era because he encompassed everything you're looking for in a student athlete. He's a guy who came in. He was exciting to play. He was consistent. He was a good leader. He was good off the field. He was a good student. And it got to the point where some people were annoyed at how much attention he got. But Josh Dobbs was the quintessential college football student athlete.
Yeah, he was. And I mean, he was everything you wanted. He was a good football player, good to great football player. He helped your offense out so much, especially with the offensive woes of the offensive line that was in front of him for parts of his career as well. A good student, smart student, good ambassador. So he's definitely a fan favorite. Brian, when I'm going down these lists, and again, we're going to get more into it tomorrow, and I'm really excited about that. I replied to your email last night with fun.
Yes.
So as you can tell, I'm really, really stoked about it. Some of these positions, man, and it's just not, you know, for the last 10 years, it's slim picking. Now, there are three quarterbacks that you feel pretty good about that the three of us can take, or, you know, really two that you feel pretty good about that the two of us can take. Running backs, not a whole lot. The third pick at running back is not going to be a fantastic one, but at other positions like offensive line, I mean, goodness, there are so many.
You're right on that. Let me just interject on that, because when I was going through and looking at all these players on offense, how few stars there were, and a lot of those guys played a lot of years, but how few stars there were at other positions. But then you have two different offensive lines over this 10-year period that just about anybody should have been able to win with, and Tennessee didn't for a lot of that.
Yeah, they didn't. And, I mean, you're talking about guys who have long-lasting NFL careers. I mean, James Stone, who I think right now is currently a free agent, but has played the last 10 years in the league. I mean, Zach Fulton, a guy that's played for a while. Juwan James, who just recently had a baby. So congratulations to him.
Congrats to Ian Rainey.
Yeah, just a lot of, and I mean, you know, and then now you got Trey Smith, who's going to go on. Cade Mays is not on this list, but he will go on and play in the NFL. But there's a lot to pick from on the offensive line of the last 10 years, but Tennessee, whether it be coaching, injuries, the lack of talent around, just couldn't find a way to consistently win with it.
Wes said, my favorite thing about Dobbs is that he made UT football exciting again. That was something we hadn't felt in a long time at that point. I can tell you that for sure. You know, he came in 2013 in the Alabama game. I mean, it was feet to the fire. And you didn't see it. You saw it a little bit in that Alabama game. He led Tennessee on a scoring drive that kept the long non-shutout streak alive. And then, you know, his start at Missouri didn't go well. But I remember going to Kentucky in 2013 where Dobbs was about all you had. And Tennessee was trying to get to 1,000 rushing yards for Rajon Neal that year and did. But Dobbs was the key to that game. And he was dealing with an injury that people didn't know about then. But the iconic memory that I have of Josh Dobbs' freshman year is him rumbling up the sideline for something like 70 yards for a touchdown. And he was running, but he was limping. He was limp running because he had a leg injury. And took it the distance for a touchdown, outran Kentucky's whole team limping. That I'll never forget that. And then he comes in the 2014 season and leads that incredible comeback at South Carolina where I'd given up on the game. And if Tennessee doesn't win that game, they don't go to a bowl. Yeah. And if Butch Jones starts with back-to-back seasons with no bowl game, even with the injuries they had, you know, he would get year three, but it would have been a hot seat year three. But Josh Dobbs led that comeback, and like Wes said, he made UT football exciting again. Every time the ball was in his hands, you leaned in because you wanted to see what he was going to do next.
I was playing being a graduate assistant at Carson Newman kind of the entire career of Josh Dobbs. So I didn't get to watch as many games as I wanted to, but I just remember his freshman and sophomore year before he became a full-time starter. It's almost like he would come in and, you know, Tennessee was down to its last option. But they put Dobbs in and he would just go off some way. I remember games against South Carolina, as you mentioned, games against Missouri that he would just go in and show out. And then what was the biggest reason for him not playing earlier on in his career? Could he just not?
They wanted to redshirt him.
Yeah.
I knew that
his freshman year they wanted to redshirt. Well, I guess it'd be for, were they trying to redshirt him his sophomore year as well?
Yeah, they were trying to redshirt in both years.
Okay, and so that's why. Okay.
Because you had depth at the position.
Yeah.
And you had experience in Justin Worley. You had Nathan Peterman, who showed flashes. I remember, and now I don't want to definitively say which year it was. I think we're talking about the 2014 season. Nathan Peterman won the quarterback job in fall camp, but they would not give him the starting job because of how he'd performed in games in 2013. I mean, you ask a lot of media that saw it, and I saw some scrimmages that the media didn't get to see working there at that point. Nathan Peterman in camp was the best quarterback. Justin Worley was second, and Dobbs was third. And so their plan is, well, we're still going to start Worley because we don't trust Peterman at this point, but we feel like we have two good options, and we saw what Dobbs could do as a freshman. Let's redshirt him, and then we've got 3 years with him, and we feel really good about that. Couldn't do it. Worley gets hurt. Peterman can't play. Peterman gets hurt. So you've got Dobbs. You're back to Dobbs. And he took over and really had a great close to that season. Ends up being the MVP of the bowl game. When he was a freshman, you know, he was buried on the depth chart. He was skinny, and they were worried about him getting hurt. They wanted to redshirt him then, but Worley gets hurt. Peterman has the broken thumb against Florida, as well as the terrible performance against Florida.
What year is this?
That's 2013.
Okay, so that's a big reason why he didn't. Okay.
Yeah, and Riley Ferguson was in front of him as well. There's some conjecture on that. They went back and forth based on who they were playing the next week. If there was a mobile quarterback, Ferguson would be the number three quarterback. Dobbs would be the scout team guy. If they were playing a team with a traditional passer, Ferguson would be the practice quarterback. Dobbs would be the third string guy. Regardless, you had three options, but then Ferguson gets hurt in practice. Worley gets hurt in a game. Peterman's hurt. You go back to Worley. Worley gets hurt against Ole Miss, and so it's Dobbs' show, and it wasn't great the rest of the year, but he took it. They wanted to redshirt him, and that's why he didn't. And the other thing was with Josh Dobbs, and this continued until his senior year, he was not as good in practice as he was in games. He was, and they figured it out, he was kind of trying to analyze every possible outcome of every possible play in practice. And so he's throwing it high, he's throwing it low, he's not as locked in because he's trying to simulate every possibility while just trying to execute the play. And he didn't do that in games, and that's why he was so good in games, but it also hindered them their confidence in putting him in the game.
I know we're up against it, we got to go, but what spring was it? Riley Ferguson and Jalen Hurd both came in as mid-year enrollees. I guess it would have been the spring of 2014?
13. Yeah, the spring of 2014.
And
yeah.
So I remember I went to that orange and white game just because I had nothing going on, and everyone just went absolutely nuts whenever Ferguson and Hurd were back there for the offense in that spring. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, it's a shame that Ferguson didn't have things more together when he was here, because if he had invested in film and everything that he invested in once he got to Memphis here, but he needed to lose this opportunity and go powder coat fences for a year in Charlotte to realize what he needed to do, and he ended up being a really good football player at Memphis for it.
Yep.
We'll come back. Some of your favorite players of the 2010s. We'll take your phone calls next, 656-9900. Also, an update from Jeremy Pruitt on the health of his team as he talked to Dan Patrick this morning. That's next on the Eric Haines Show.
The great thing about sports is it never stops. Here's another 60-second sports minute on the Sports Animal.
Eric Haines with the Midday Sports Minutes. Three New Orleans Pelicans players have tested positive for COVID-19. Due to privacy laws, those players' names were not mentioned, but all three have been self-isolating. The Pelicans are currently 3.5 games back of the 8th-place Grizzlies in the West, entering the NBA's restart at the end of the month. Nation's top-rated 2021 cornerback, 13th overall player Tony Grimes of Virginia, has committed to Mack Brown and North Carolina. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves signed a bill Tuesday retiring the last state flag in the United States with a Confederate battle emblem following pressure from the sports world last week. Division III Grinnell College in Iowa is canceling football and other fall sports due to COVID-19. And in case you missed it from yesterday, no minor league baseball in 2020. It became official per report from Minor League Baseball. With your Midday Sports Minute, I'm Eric Kane.
Welcome back into the Eric Haines Show. Talking some of our favorite players of the 2010s here this morning. Dustin Seconds, Nick Revez, says he's a godly man, blessing to know him. I know he's been coaching, I don't know if he still is, but he was coaching at your alma mater, Caner, at Carson Newman.
Yeah, so I talked with Nick just actually about a month ago for an interview I was doing. Part of my VolQuest work, and he is currently down at Albany State in Georgia. He's been down there for, I want to say, about 3 years now, but he came on about midway, I think it was off season heading into my junior season, and he came in and coached up the linebackers a little bit and then coached some running backs. I worked out with him for a couple of years. Good guy. Yeah, I second that. He was, when I was in high school, I was an undersized middle linebacker, so I was a big fan of Nick Revez.
You could identify with what he was going through.
Absolutely.
Corey adds on Juwan Jennings as well. I think he will go down as one of the favorite players. Just going from being the fun-loving guy with a little bit of an edge that he was before his injury, everything he went through to come back from his injury, and is just trying to get back in the good graces of everything, and then what he's done the last 2 years. With Jeremy Pruitt as head coach has really been amazing. So good to see Juwan. Speaking of Jeremy Pruitt, he did mention in an interview with the Dan Patrick Show this morning, Tennessee football players are still at zero positive tests for COVID-19. And he does note that they are going to test their players again after the 4th of July weekend. They're asking them to be very safe and very responsible because – and I think they're able to point to some other college football programs that have not been as fortunate because they haven't been as responsible off the field as Tennessee's players have. So still at a zero, that's got to be a big positive for this program right now.
It's a huge positive. And again, when you look at Clemson, I think the number was up to 37 last time we've heard. LSU's had an issue with it too. I mean, you've seen programs being affected by it across the country. And kind of going back to what we talked about last night, I mean, not only like you in practice and on the field on Saturdays, you got to have a game plan for how you're going to combat this right now. And so when you go home over the 4th of July weekend, it's going to be up to the players to be smart and to try to distance themselves and to not go and get themselves exposed to this coronavirus and then come back and hopefully they'll all pass it again. But that is that's great news. It's a hat tip to Tennessee and how they're going about the process as well. So good job all around so far.
Yeah, because as we mentioned yesterday when we were talking about the Boomer Esiason stuff, and I got a couple of messages from people around yesterday afterward, the effects that they are seeing at some schools with guys who either have tested positive and returned or tested positive for having antibodies, and meaning they had this at some point earlier in the year, they are having trouble getting their conditioning back to the same levels, and in some cases getting back to close to the same level. So that's another reason why schools are doing everything they can to keep their kids from getting it, because while most kids are going to be fine, even the ones that don't have symptoms necessarily as far as showing that they're sick do have symptoms when it comes to trying to perform either on the field or in workouts to the level that they did before. So, you know, I've seen a lot of people go, well, just let them get it. You know, they're healthy, they're young, they'll be fine. That's not the strategy that schools are taking, because schools are worried about what the long-term impacts may be of this because of the short-term impacts that they're seeing right now.
Yeah, and we just don't know the answers right now. And, you know, we're not doctors, we're not medical experts. You and I certainly don't know the answers right now. And as a society, we're learning. That we're learning every single day. We're learning more and more and more about it. So, certainly with what Boomer Esiason said, I don't agree with. And I don't think it would be a smart play for anybody, not just an athlete, for anybody to, certainly anybody else, to go and try to get this just to get it over with and out of the way. Because as you pointed out, there might be long-term ramifications for it that we just don't even know about it right now.
We'll come back. 656-9900 if you want to join us. Still talking favorite players of the 2010s. Also, there's one duo that currently plays for Tennessee that they probably need on the field a little more often in the fall. We'll tell you why coming up next on the Eric Ainge Show.
I guess the next time, like I went years and years and years without one. I guess the next time I got a tetanus shot when I was in high school, and I remember going in there, I'm like, you know, junior, senior, and, you know, football player and all that stuff. And I remember just dreading it. I was telling my mom, I was like, this is going to hurt so bad. It's going to hurt. And I go in there and I just felt like a little tiny pinch, and I didn't even know that that was the shot. And then that was it. And I'm like, oh, that's it. Shoot. I'll always take the shot. Now with tetanus shots, those hurt for days after, but that's, yeah. You know, but the shots are always the easy way to go.
So does the steroid shot when you get poison ivy.
Yeah,
it hurts for a couple of days. It's sore for a couple of days. It doesn't hurt. It's just like you pulled a hammy or something.
Ain't no thing. Oh,
that's right. We've been talking the best, our favorite players of the 2010s, and we'll continue to take your responses on Twitter. And if you want to give us a call, 656-9900. Pro Football Focus had a interesting stat yesterday. A duo of defensive backs for Tennessee, when they were on the field, combined to allow zero touchdowns when they were on the field together. Bryce Thompson, Sean Schamberger, combined to play 686 snaps in coverage and did not allow a single touchdown.
Yeah, it's good news because both those guys are returning for Tennessee here in 2020. And, you know, it took a little while for Bryce Thompson to get onto the field. Of course, he had off the field issues there at the tail end of training camp, missed the first couple weeks of the season, came back in against Florida and just looked, in my opinion, just completely out of shape. He should not have played that week. But a guy that is obviously probably Tennessee's best defensive back and continued to get better and show that as the season went on. Sean Schamberger is a guy that I felt like still has a lot to learn, but man, he is all over the field. He's got a nose for the ball. Like, I feel like wherever the ball is, Sean Schamberger's around it. And so that doesn't surprise me as well. But those are two guys that Tennessee is going to definitely be counting on. I feel like Sean Schamberger was kind of all Tennessee had at that star position last year. Really didn't have a whole lot of options. Now, Baylen Buchanan's supposed to be back and supposed to be adding depth to that position now in 2020. And Tennessee's also brought in a couple of defensive backs as freshmen that are going to be adding depth as well. But that's a good sign for those two guys to have that stat coming in to lead that defensive back along with Jalen McCullough, Alante Taylor, and probably Trayvon Flowers and company.
We've spent a lot of time talking about the offense this offseason. I think the defense and how they can adjust and how they can lock teams down may be the story of the fall. That offense is going to be able to put up some points. How's the defense going to contain some offenses? I think the answer to that question is pretty well. They're going to have to learn to stop the run, but stopping the pass, I think, is going to be a strength of this team.
I think so, too. And, I mean, you lose Nigel Warrior, and that's a big loss. He had the big missed tackle against BYU that, you know, everyone wants to blame Alante Taylor, but if Nigel Warrior makes that tackle at midfield, it's probably game over. He struggled a little bit earlier in the season, but Warrior proved to be, I mean, he was an all-conference player last year. He proved to be...
Both of those guys ended up being huge as the season went on.
Yeah, and so Warrior was really good for Tennessee last year. So you're going to have to replace him. Of course, Daniel Petulie, who's led the unit in tackles the last three seasons, and your top quarterback pressure guy, and Daryl Taylor, a second-round pick. So those are three guys at three different levels that are huge, huge losses. However, Tennessee returns literally everybody else. Everybody else, and plus you've added some more as well. And so I think the defense is going to be very, very strong. You just have to find, you've got to find another linebacker. You got to find another linebacker and for the inside to play next to Henry T, and just, you know, guys to rotate in and out at the edge position. You saw Kovarich Crouch do it a little bit last year. He'll probably play inside linebacker, but, you know, Tyler Barron, Morvin Joseph, DeAndre Johnson, you know, Kevon Bennett, those type of guys. You got to find one of those guys that can really just go and get after the quarterback, because the other one is going to be off the field the majority of the time, because that will be when Sean Chamber is on the field.
Yeah, and Chamber, one of the guys we're talking about, I think he's been vastly underrated, particularly last year. His development, his growth, and what he was able to do last year. You know, you saw flashes, and he was highly touted coming in, but last year was really the year that he stepped forward and came into his own on that.
He came in, and, you know, Tyler loves to bring up the fact that he was the first one to have his stripes removed his freshman year of camp, and then he made that start against Alabama and did very, very well as a true freshman. But you're right, he really came into his own last year and solidified himself as a guy on Tennessee's defense, a guy that is going to play the majority of the snaps, a guy that is, you know, a main cog for Derek Ansley and Jeremy Pruitt in that defensive backfield. And, again, I think he's a guy that, as you pointed out, is often forgotten about in that defensive backfield, because you always hear about Bryce Thompson, Alante Taylor. Last year coming into the season, it was Warren Burrell, Nigel Warrior. You know, Sean Schamberger's been back there the entire time, probably playing more snaps than any of those guys, and he's getting it done.
Yeah, and we'll continue to get it done, hopefully, for Tennessee this year. When we come back on the Eric Haynes Show, and by the way, to Tyler Ivins, happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
Hey! I'm glad you said that.
We've not made the whole list of people that are making more money or making less money in sports than Bobby Bo this year. Until he signs his new deal, Patrick Mahomes is scheduled to make a lower base salary this coming year than Bobby Bonilla got today. Happy Bobby Bo Day. Coming up on the Eric Haynes Show, we'll play a little over-under. It's an all-Tennessee football stats edition of over-under. Coming up next, 656-9900 if you want to join us on the Eric Haynes Show.